My brothers and sisters, what a crazy week this past week has been. So much confusion, so much misunderstanding. We want you to know and rest assured that we love and respect all children, all of them, every single one. Every single one. In fact, there's a little something I feel inspired to say on the subject. We believe the children of heterosexual parents are our future. Teach them well and let them have all the ordinances they need for salvation in the kingdom of our Lord. Show them that the church is absolutely never going to back down on our insistence that homosexual sin is the worst possible form of sexual or any other kind of sin. Give them a sense of hetero pride and make it easier. Curtail the children's loud laughter and let them know this is how it's going to be. I decided long ago never to doubt any of this church's teaching. If I never see Jesus to be an actual witness, at least I'll cling to what I believe. No matter what the world takes from me, they can't take away my bigotry. Because the greatest love of all is happening to children everywhere. I found the greatest love of all is always to just obey and not think twice of things that come from me.
This is Infants on Thrones, philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Smack, 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 smack down. Smack down. All
right. So, I guess you guys, we were wrong.
Tell us how.
It turns out, you know, this whole past week we've been completely misrepresenting the church.
Well, I think it's much ado about nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So,
although, you know, what I was thinking, though, we really don't even need to record this because John Dillon scooped us.
Oh, did he?
John's already put this out. Everything's there that could be said certainly has been said. So, good night, guys.
What did he scoop us on? What are you talking about?
He's put an episode out about smacking down the re-clarification.
Oh, he's already done that.
Yeah,
wow.
Somebody commented on his post too. Oh my gosh, you scooped the infants. And I wanted to put so badly. I'm just pleased that we're the standard.
Yeah.
Is that the one that Hamer's on?
Hey, well, it's on the Mormon Stories.
Hey, guys, is Mormon podcasting an ice cream shop? Because there's a lot of scooping going on.
Yeah.
Ouch. That's all right. Funny. That is at the minute 19 mark.
And let's start now.
Kristen and I are doing the wipeout run tomorrow. You know, like this little 5K with the like the wipeout show with the big balls and whatnot.
Oh yeah,
and we're rainbowing it up for that's our big protest, is wearing rainbow colors to this thing. So we're getting geared up.
Right on.
Yay! Fight the power.
That's really brave.
So fuck you, Jake.
So how I'd like to approach this is to start with Otterson's clarification on MormonNewsroom.org, and then at one point he makes a reference to the letter, and then I think we could jump into the letter and read that, and then go back to Otterson. Because it really all starts and ends with Otterson in the church anymore, right? He's kind of the
prophet.
He is the Lord now. Like, he's the one that's whispering in the ears of the D. Todd Christoffersons and saying, okay, in this interview that we're having, here's what I want you to say. All right. And he's telling them the edit point. Go ahead and edit that part out, and we'll just show it, make it look like it's a candid interview, right? I mean, this is really the Otterson-run church anymore, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Feels that way anyway.
All right.
PR guys. So,
so can we thank Otterson for the policy?
I bet the policy was more the 12 guys in the room, and then Otterson just was brought in for damage control more than anything.
Well, right.
My theory.
That he was the interviewer, and the way he does the interview. Well, wait a minute. You're certainly not saying that.
Yeah.
Blessings right. can't happen to children of gay members, are you? Oh no. Of course, I'm not saying that.
Right. So, yeah. He was the plant in an infomercial. How did you come up with my real life?
This seems amazing.
Yes.
Can it really only be four easy payments in 1995?
that's good.
All right. So let's. Do you all have the link?
Yep.
All right.
Randy's not here, so we're good.
All right. So this is called Understanding the Handbook by Michael Otterson, Managing Director, Church Public Affairs, Salt Lake City. If there's one thing that virtually all Christians agree on, it's Jesus Christ's tender love of children.
Yeah, I'm glad to state that up front.
Yeah.
That's useful knowledge. Okay.
It's just such a strange, I mean, not strange, it's predictable that how they're going to frame all this thing. But let me get through the first paragraph. Both the Bible and Book of Mormon deliver touching accounts of his love for, and it's in quotes, little ones. Blessing them.
So-called
little ones. Blessing them and forbidding his disciples from keeping children from him.
Right.
So
okay.
I understand why he's doing the blessing them, because then he comes up at the end of this article and he's like, and see, we still bless them. But this whole forbidding his disciples from keeping children from him, that almost seems like it's working. Like, that's not really what you want to highlight up front, because that is kind of happening here. But
still,
saying, we don't hate kids. Okay. We don't hate them.
Yeah.
That's what he's leading with.
Well, and like, where actually do we have this tender love of children from Jesus?
The portrait.
I know it's in the portrait.
Well, suffer the little ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's not that like central of a theme to everything that's going on. It's not like Jesus was everywhere. He was like, bring the kids, you know. It happened that one time. Did it happen other times?
Yeah.
Mormon. Sorry, I was on mute, and I'm like, hello, Glenn, stop. I'm talking, but the Book of Mormon, right, there's that whole thing of bring your little ones.
Right.
So that's the most...
And then what happens, like, angels come down and surround the kids and tell them things that... And like, the kids open their mouths and say things that are way beyond the understanding of any child. And
they lift up the prophet at General Conference. Yeah, they're all over the place.
His joy was full, as you recall.
Right. Yeah.
His joy was full because he was with children, and he was the most comfortable with children.
Is that what it says?
Well, no, this
is... Are you talking about Michael Jackson, or is this...
also very comfortable. Don't be ignorant, Heather. Don't be ignorant.
Thank you.
Yeah, also, Jesus also, coincidentally, excellent dancer. Really.
Right.
On the water. There is a talk somewhere, and I can't quote it, but it was this concept of he was the most comfortable around children because they were the only ones that could approach his level of worthiness.
Well, so I think it's interesting that he invokes all of Christianity in the first part. I mean, I understand, because that's one of the main criticisms. It's like, it's very unchristian to bar children, but it's just weird. Like, to me, it's weird to try and find that common ground and then follow it up with both the Bible and the Book of Mormon. I'm like, oh, you just lost all the Christians right there. Like, I don't know. It's not to be confused
with a phenomenal Broadway musical. did you see that Lewis Black rant?
Oh,
that
yeah.
was good stuff.
All right, who takes the next paragraph?
I got it. In the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the family is reverenced and children are its centerpiece. Yet last week, an instructional letter from church leadership addressing the sensitive topic of how to respond to same-sex relationships sparked a wave of inquiries from church members. Most of the questions were about children. Okay.
And like right here, this is when I want to start keeping track of all the time that he's using words to cover up what really happened. It wasn't there was a lot of inquiries. There was a lot of criticism. But he's not going to use the word criticism. He's going to say there were questions. People had questions
because
their understanding was incomplete. So we're here to fill in that understanding. It's this very benign, loving thing that he's doing for us here.
Yeah. And it says yet. Like what's with the maybe I don't mean to be the grammar police here.
No, I picked up that too.
Like so children are at the center of the church. Okay, got it. Okay. Yet last week this letter made some of you have questions. What's up with that? Because children are awesome and questions can't come from anything where we talk about them. Like I don't know. It just seemed really weird.
So maybe it's because even though it's so ingrained in all of the Latter-day Saints' minds that children are the centerpiece of the family, which is the centerpiece of the church, they still had questions.
Right.
Which is strange because they would know that they're at the centerpiece already.
I just think about that hymn that says, I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Yeah.
And it's like Michael Jackson.
137 or something. Yeah, that was more Michael Jackson. Jesus, we've got a theme.
All right, shum on, guys. Shum on.
Well done.
Boom. Yeah.
This is a lot more jovial than I expected. Earlier today, Glenn was just like, Hulk,
had it.
Glenn, smash!
Right. Yeah, I wrote a very brief email where every single word had a period. That's how you know I am so pissed. That's about as pissed as I got. I don't know. I started writing an open letter to the presidency, but then I got distracted.
I was going to make a minor effort toward activism, but
yeah, it grew somewhat tedious.
Right. Well, why don't you send him a tweet? 150 characters or less.
Yes.
Yeah. Whittle that down.
Oh.
All right. So.
All right. Next paragraph.
Okay. I'll go. Because the letter was an instructional document to leadership throughout the world and not a church-wide announcement through LDS.org or through Church Public Affairs, there was no additional information or context on the usual church websites.
Wait, do we have to wait for the whole... Okay, sorry. This is just so funny. It's just asinine to be like, so there's this document that the leaders of the church use to make critical decisions on people's salvation.
Exactly.
And we don't give context around what we put in it because we only give context for PR statements on our shitty website. Like, what the fuck?
Because yeah. Really, how are these leaders supposed to really understand anything? We don't put anything with clarity to the leaders that govern the church. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, the handbook is like it's a technical document, right? I mean, it's not an ancient historical text where it's like, well, you need to understand in this time. Like, it's a technical document that's to instruct people what they should do in specific cases. And we are reading. I mean, people weren't. They weren't proof texting this. Like it's just they're just reading the words that were part of the policy and forming their opinions. Like what other outside information would need to be incorporated?
Well, but that's why people had questions, which again is in quotes because it's really criticism. But the handbook reminds me of the Boy Scout books. You know, like for getting merit badges. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? There was like these different steps that you had to achieve to get your merit badges and stuff. And that's like what the Handbook of Instructions is. It's a list of things to do and definitions and clarifications. So they added what? They added people who are in a same-gender marriage as apostates, but they didn't give context for it. What context do you need?
Right.
Didn't need context because it was clear. It was very explicit.
Yeah.
Right. Suggest otherwise is not just disingenuous, it's lying.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to get at. Glenn said it better than I did. But I mean, it's like, you know, if you're going to read like a Lego manual, you don't need context.
Yeah.
The exactly. Point of the manual is so that you don't need context, so you can just read what to do and do it, you know? Anyway,
good analogy. An instructional document. Generally, this is an instructional document. What did they mean by this?
They meant what they said.
Right.
That's what instructions are.
That makes this article to the handbook.
Andy gets to it. Sorry, Heather.
Oh, I just said that makes this article the handbook to the handbook, right?
Well,
the appendix to the handbook, right? Yeah.
Right. Okay,
Or not just this document, but what he's calling attention to here is the Church Public Affairs and LDS.org and where they're able to add context to the reasons why things are being done. So I don't know.
All right. So I'm going to
finish it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and finish it off. That prompted questions, Glenn.
Yeah.
Questions from many church members who were mostly reading headlines portraying instructions as a rejection of children and refusal to name babies. Members understandably had specific questions about about how the announced change might affect their loved ones.
Yeah, nobody read beyond the headline. Nobody read the actual effing document that was only a paragraph or two, a page. That was too much. So they only read headlines, Otterson. No one had access to the whole document. Thank you.
But it is a refusal to name babies. That's exactly what it is. Like it says right here, if there's a baby that fits this profile, don't bless them.
But again, to be able to misdirect and say, no, that's not what the actual word said. That's what headline said is, again, not just an obfuscation. I can't even say that.
That word's on moratorium when we don't have Randy.
My bad. Yeah. But it's an outright lie, and he knows it.
Yep.
Liar!
But so he's also focusing, he's responding about the church members, that this was the church members' response, that they didn't read past the media headlines. Because what he's trying to say is that, hey, all of you members of the church, you've been deceived by the media.
Yeah.
Right. There's more going on. We weren't able to tell you because this was mainly just meant for the leaders who you trust anyway. So this is why there was all this confusion. It's media and ex-Mormons and people that were making a sensationalist stink out of it.
Well, right. I think the next paragraph does that even more explicitly.
Yeah. Before we go to the next paragraph, though, can I ask you, Heather, because you were at church last Sunday, were in your ward, were people talking about this? Was this a thing?
So I'm glad that you are admitting that that's why you asked me to be on this. You're like, do we know any active Mormons?
Heather, how's it feel to no longer be the token woman and now to be the token active?
I love it. As the senior active...
Wait, is Heather a woman?
That was my assumption. I was going with woman or transgender.
Like so, I mean, it's different in congregations. I just went to dinner with some friends and we were talking about how different it was. In my church, which is very pharisaical and by the handbook and takes it all very literally, they did not mention it at all in any of the three, not by name, in any of the 3 hours. In sacrament meeting, they announced, our stake president just loves you all so much. He's going to open some extra office hours up today. If you just have anything at all that you want to talk to him about, he would love to meet with you. And then we had a talk in sacrament on following the prophet. And there were more veiled references in the other 2 hours. And people were boiling over about it until finally in the third hour, they were bagging on people who've left the church and who just can't follow the prophet until one of my friends got up and made a speech and stormed out and I followed her. It was just too much. And then there are other wards like...
was her speech about this?
Yes. Well, no. Again, she didn't say it. She didn't say it because it was the 900-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wanted to say. But then in the Morningside Heights ward in Manhattan, I think that's what it's called, they addressed it head on, talked about it immediately, encouraged people to said, even if you feel with this policy that you can't be officially a member of the church, we've always, reached out to others and welcomed others, and we hope you'll still come and worship with us. And then they had a sacrament talk on how everybody needs to be more comfortable with ambiguity. So I think there's really a wide range of ways that it's handled in different congregations.
I bet the policy will have the same effect in the way that's implemented.
Yeah, it might now. Yeah. Now that it's a policy and not a doctrine.
Right, that makes all the difference. I mean, the First Presidency writes a letter. This is just policy, guys. I
think it was inspiration that we did the 14 Fundamentals like a week before this came out, right? We were inspired.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. The episode demonstrates clearly the dangers of drawing conclusions based on... No, Heather should go next so she's not last. That would be sexist. Go.
Wait. Sexism averted.
So you're going to make her read the words that you already read, and that's okay.
Yes.
I told you.
Do it this way.
No, I will not. I will not be your affirmative action chick. You read it.
The episode demonstrates clearly the dangers of drawing conclusions based on incomplete news reports, tweets, and Facebook posts without necessary context and accurate information. The church quickly responded to many of those concerns with a video interview with Elder D. Todd Christofferson, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles. By the end of the weekend, that interview had been viewed by millions. Awesome. So therefore, no need for the church to have to clarify, because an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ, a special witness of the Savior, even the Son of Man, came out days later in order to... respond to these tweets,
the
news
questions.
Reports.
He was responding. He was answering the questions. He was just answering the questions
That's
that were out there.
Fantastic. So I'm so happy they acknowledged that.
Mm-hmm. There's a little dig at social media here. He's like, tweets and Facebook posts. Bleh, I wish we didn't have these. Back in my day, it was awesome when we controlled everything because there was only like three television stations. I don't know.
Right.
He's pretty upset by it. He wants to remind us that they did everything right.
Well, so, what is incomplete about the news reports? Like what?
Well,
they didn't mention polygamy. That's what was incomplete, right? That they didn't compare it to polygamy.
Yeah, so they didn't say, oh, we've already been excluding kids, so this is fine.
It's interesting because when you look at the clarification that Otterson makes here, spoiler alert, he's basically saying it's not any kid that has a gay parent the way that it's written in the handbook. It was only intended to be kids that are currently living with a gay parent that's in that relationship, right? That's their primary residence. But Christofferson doesn't make that point in the video. He doesn't make that distinction at all. This is like an evolving thing that just came up later. But they're like, okay, this is what we need to say. It still doesn't get them off the hook, but I don't know. Just interesting to watch this evolving thing. I think you're right, Matt. It's that he mentions this and that millions of people saw it. It doesn't. I mean, so what?
And it's not
you're still
real,
having to do it here.
There was no clarification there, right? So, what did Christofferson say that was the net new in this video? So, what was the purpose of this video other than a stall tactic?
That we're
the
protecting the kids. That was it. It was we're doing this because we love kids. He's like, I've got kids. I've got grandkids. I love kids. We love kids. The reason that we're doing this is to help them not have to be put into difficult situations because we love them so much.
Well, it was, I have kids. I have grandkids. I also have a brother who's gay.
He didn't say that though.
He said I'm a brother.
Did he?
He did. Yes.
But he didn't say who's gay.
No. But that was the
wink, wink.
No,
I didn't
no,
guess
I think
that.
More than a wink, wink. It was a. I don't know what's more than a wink, wink.
Blink?
Oh, a wink, wink.
But he. What he did, what's significant about Christofferson is it wasn't just a clarification, it was an affirmation.
Yeah.
He came out and he said,
yes,
this
is a real thing.
We meant it when we said it, and I'm saying it now. What? That's what he did, and now they're like,
Yeah.
So that's why it's so damaging, right? Because now it's changed. And the other reason it's damaging is they picked the same guy who said the exact opposite thing 6 months ago. So now there's all these spliced videos online of showing him like doing this about face. Thank you, Brother Jake. And it just seems like you could have, if this was planned or calculated or really good PR, they would have done an even better job than the amazing job that they're doing. So.
Well, Scott and I watched this together. Scott watched the Christofferson video together, and our reaction was just stunned that he didn't say more or didn't try to put a spin on it. In fact, I predicted what the church put out today as that's what Christofferson was going to say. he was going to immediately backtrack, and then it would have been like, oh, see, guys, don't get all worked up about nothing. So when he doubled down or went all in or whatever Texas Hold'em reference you want to – blackjack or Texas Hold'em reference you want to use, some gambling reference. When he did that, it was like, oh, my gosh, they really are just drawing a line in the sand. And so that's what makes what happened today so much more – not just so hollow, but also so much of an expose to – reveal what they really are. Which
you think it was a bit of a gambit? Like they were thinking, like, oh, this video, millions of views. Oh, you know, Otterson was like, all we got to do is get this video out there, talk a little bit, 10 minutes, it'll be gone, it'll be fine.
Well, I think what they really did is send out talking points to their members, and I think that's borne out by immediately people started regurgitating a couple lines that Christopher used, and the two were polygamy that Heather
polygamy.
Points out.
Yep.
And then the other one was, we're really protecting kids, without any explanation as to how. So you saw that with the members. So I thought it was really a pretty effective way of sending the message out to its members to now carry forth on the evil new, you know, the media, social media, Twitter, etc. And you saw that, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. It didn't go away. The press cycle didn't. Nobody other than members, right? There's nobody outside of active members of the church who are like, that makes total sense. Moving on. Like it totally didn't work. I don't know. I don't know why they think that everyone's so stupid.
That's the part that made me so angry today. Yeah, it's how obvious the maneuvering is, but that there's people who are totally blind to it.
Yeah.
And there was something that I wanted to bring up. Maybe I'll dig it up and we can do it at the end. But at this point, he makes a reference to the handbook changes that have been posted on the primary church website, LDS.org. And this is the letter that the First Presidency is sending out that's going to be read in sacrament meetings this Sunday. So at this point, let's pause Otterson and jump over to this document, and do you want to pick this one up, Heather?
Yep. Let me make sure I have the right one. First Presidency clarifies church handbook changes. Mm-hmm. Dear brethren and sisters, the Council of the First Presidency and Quorum of the 12 Apostles.
Say who it's to.
Sorry, two general authorities. Tell me how to do this, okay?
Yeah. The
general
authorities. This is significant. I think.
You're right.
Don't forget the date.
Oh my God, November 13th.
Do it in your destiny voice.
Oh, sorry, oh. I missed part of this. 47 East South Temple Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. To general authorities.
Well, that shut us up quick. You guys stop talking over her. Do it. Keep doing that.
General Auxiliary Presidencies, Stake, District, Mission, and Temple Presidents, Bishops, and Branch Presidents. Dear this is the fun part. So
I have a question.
And it says, dear brethren and sisters.
Yeah. Okay, you scooped mine.
Well, General Auxiliary Presidencies.
So can you believe that they said sisters after not include? Okay, that's not
right.
Work.
Right. Yeah, the two doesn't include any. But wait, but there's general auxiliary presidencies does include relief society.
So three ladies get this.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that's more than one sister still.
All the auxiliaries, which include primary and young women, right. So every woman leader. General leader is included.
See?
You're equal. So cynical. You guys are just...
We're the worst.
Totally equal.
Do you want me to read, or is it someone else's turn?
No, it's yours.
Okay. Dear brethren and sisters, the Council of the First Presidency and the Quorum of the 12 Apostles provides the following guidance in applying provisions on same-gender marriage recently added to Handbook 1, literally the handbook on the handbook. Revealed doctrine is clear that families are eternal in nature and purpose. We are obligated to act with that perspective for the welfare of both adults and children. The newly added handbook provisions affirm that adults who choose to enter into a same-gender marriage or similar relationship commit sin that warrants a church disciplinary council. So isn't it more than that?
But
you have to have a council? You're already declared to be in apostasy, right? It's more than...
So why don't they put adulterers in the same apostate category as gay married people?
Because it's because by putting it in the apostate category, what they're signaling is the being in a gay relationship is no longer just an incidental sin from that's just incidental from the law of chastity. It's now an intrinsic sin. It's kind of malum in se. It's something that it's something that's axiomatic to the church. Like they're becoming. Being not gay is part of the church's doctrine now. I mean, this is becoming one of its core tenets.
Sure, but the way they're framing it here is, we're protecting the sacred, eternal nature of families, and gay marriage, and promoting tolerance for homosexuality is detrimental to the eternal nature of the family. So we're going to categorize it as apostasy. We're going to go after it. We're obligated to act for the welfare of both adults and children, right? If they really are obligated. Okay, so I know this person who went through a divorce, and his wife kind of stepped out on him and, you know, stopped wearing garments and broke temple covenants. And wouldn't you think that that's kind of against the
families?
Eternal nature of the family as well, that kind of behavior. So why wouldn't they put that in the same category as being obligated to act and call that apostate? I mean, they say that, what is it? It warrants a disciplinary council. Sure, they'll take people that have been, committed adultery and they go through a disciplinary council, but they're not labeling them as apostates.
Right, because there's nothing that this is the only sin that is that they're essentially acknowledging is a part of somebody's being. Somebody's not just a rapist. That's one who rapes forcibly. Sorry, forcible rape.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Matt. And I've got this question when it comes up later, like when they make the clarification that it's okay to think gay thoughts. Like, I'd like to see them explain why that's okay, because then are they saying it is part of their nature, or are they saying it's a choice? You know, because if I think they're stuck between those things and haven't really clarified what it is, and they keep acting like it's a choice. Like, oh, it's just a choice to be celibate for the rest of your life. You can have these inclinations, unless you're Packer, which, you know, Packer said, no, those thoughts aren't even natural. People say that it is, and that's not true, right? So wouldn't it be the same thing on the adultery side, that it's your nature is to be heterosexual and to act on that, but you make the choice not to?
Yeah, but to say that your nature is to to mess around on your spouse, that's not what it is. I must have multiple partners at once, or,
well, it's not after the manifesto.
Right,
it used to be, but it's not now.
But take any sin, it's not a, I mean, it, this is akin to saying having blonde hair is a sin. I mean, this is just a part of you that you truly cannot control. And that's why I think they distinguish it, and they make it very different.
But it's not if you have blonde hair; it's if you style it.
Right.
You can choose.
Yeah. Right. Having blonde hair is okay. You know, you can color it another color, but once you start styling it and showing it and actually having it be blonde, that's when you're crossing.
I just think there's something that's why they treat it differently. We say, well, why are they treating it differently? That's why. And that's why, you know, a rapist cannot rape anymore. A forcible rape, sorry. Not the good kind of rape. You know,
I don't understand what you're arguing for right now, Matt. I'm really confused.
Yeah, I don't.
I just want to say rape.
I know you're thinking that rapists should be able to rape. I don't.
A murderer cannot murder anymore. They are no longer a murderer. They just murdered once. All those sins that's an event that can be put behind them, but. A homosexual, a lesbian is a part of them. So that's why the church treats it differently, or sees it differently, I should say.
Yeah,
I don't think they even understand why they treat it differently, because it's not at this. They're not consistent.
I think there's a larger point here though, because apostasy means renouncing your faith. So if all of a sudden gay marriage is under the category of apostasy, it diminishes all those other things that we already knew as apostasy, right? So even if you're not a gay person and you just are, you're on the outside and you're wondering what is the doctrine of the Mormon Church, it was easy before to be like, well, there's Joseph Smith was the founder. He saw God and Jesus. There's the Book of Mormon. There's all these core tenets. But now, like, gay marriage is this weird bad thing, is part of that. And but, it's just like, as a believing Mormon, I'd be like, wait, I don't know that I want that in the same category.
But,
like,
but this is their way of making it impossible for an active member of the church to demand to be sealed, right? To demand a Mormon wedding, because if you're in an actively gay relationship, by default, you're no longer a member of the church. So that's right. Kind of like their get out of jail free card. But they're not coming out and saying this is why we're doing it. It's buried under this veiled language of families being eternal in nature and purpose. Really, they don't want to have to perform or solemnize any gay marriages. They don't ever want that pressure put on them, and they're just, you know, softballing it. They're not coming out and saying what it's about. And so by doing that, it makes it inconsistent with other things that also threaten the family.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking back to when Christofferson was interviewed 6 months ago, when the interviewer was like, hey, can you have a stance where you're supportive of gay marriage and you're on Twitter and Facebook? And he's like, oh, yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, you can still be religious and active and have those beliefs in your regular life. You're not attacking the church's position. He said something like that. But this is fundamentally, like, this is a wide-reaching doctrinal change that impacts all members, not just gays, right? Because now you have as your core belief something that makes up apostasy, which is the antithesis to your faith, is being okay with gay marriage. So
but
the
that's
inverse
not, no,
by
no,
definition
no, it's not,
is true.
No, it's not if you're okay with gay marriage, you're an apostate. It's if you're actively in it.
Right.
I think Bob's right, because the central issue, even with this clarification, remains, which is, well, for me, it's central, that this policy creates a new requirement for baptism. And that requirement is the disavowal of same-sex marriage. And it in this case is only for a certain group. But I think that the requirements for baptism ought to be universal for the church. So if this is a requirement for anyone, it ought to be the requirement for all. And if it's a requirement for baptism, surely it should be a requirement for temple attendance.
One of the questions on the temple. That's what you just said. Yeah.
Right. I think you're exactly right. And I think what the church is assuming is it's implied for anybody who isn't in the – they're almost like – which is really damaging and very insensitive to just be like, oh, we only need to go that extra mile for people who have a gay person in their life. Because the rest of us, I mean, like, it's weird, you know?
Don't know any gays.
Yeah, we don't need to ask that question. It's just implied. We all know it's ridiculous, and it's only for the people who know humans that are just normal like the rest of us where this needs to be asked. And so it's just like it's forcing a label on all of the active members who otherwise didn't realize that one of the core tenets of their faith was to be so opposed to the legal and lawful union of two same-gendered individuals. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and what does that disavowal consist in? Is that you say that you yourself wouldn't practice same-sex marriage, or that you think it's sinful, or that you would vote for curtailing access to same-sex marriage? I mean, this is something that I brought up when I renewed my temple recommend in 2009, I think, after Prop 8 passed in California, because the vote was coming up on same-sex marriage in the District of Columbia. And I said, you know, I just want to be clear that if I were asked to participate in a campaign against marriage equality in D.C., I would not lend my time, money, or vocal support to that effort. If you want to give me a recommend, knowing that, I'll take it, but you should know that. Right. And so I'm wondering now, would that be considered, would I not be allowed to have a temple recommend because I wouldn't disavow it in that way?
I think there's a good case to be made that you in this brave new world, you wouldn't get a temple recommend anymore. I mean, it's right. Up to the local leaders, as we'll learn more. But I think that's the precedent being set, is that this is so huge that it's right up there with believing in the Book of Mormon or in Joseph Smith. It's right. It's on the list of things that is considered apostasy. So the inverse is true. You have to sort of believe that's the right way that this doctrine needs to be fought by all members. But I don't know. Maybe I'm overreaching a little bit, but that's how I see it.
Well, next paragraph. I think that's the effect it'll end up having on people. The subtext is coming through loud and clear based on the reactions I've seen from believing people that feel compelled to defend this.
To double down with the brethren, yeah.
Right, and they so, I mean, I've had conversations with, you know, people like my mom, and she'll say, like, well, there must be something about gay marriage that's... like she's literally inventing for herself, is it possible that gay marriage is even worse than I already thought it was? Like, she thinks gay people are pretending. She hates gay marriage. She literally thinks that gay people are going to kill people. They're going to round people up and enforce some sort of dystopian, politically correct future. She literally believes all of that. And she's thinking to herself, is it even worse than I thought? Like, that's the effect that it's having, because the implication is there must be something so foul about this particular violation that it had to be explicitly stated twice in the handbook. It's already in the language of serious transgressions where someone may receive disciplinary counsel. Now they've added it to another section. So it's just that's the effect of is deepening the bigotry. It's manufacturing prejudice.
Yep. Exactly.
I actually had the opposite. Well, it's not surprising, but I had the opposite kind of take on it. You know, my response was like, I've been talking to a lot of gay friends recently. And, you know, I'm in the arts. I have a lot of gay friends.
Well, there's your problem. You have gay friends.
And I went to college in Massachusetts. So I, you know, I have all these people that I went to school with and who are my pals and took me to their homes for Thanksgiving. And we've grown up together and gotten married together and had kids together. And, you know, one of my very favorite gay friends, I have twin boys. He has twin girls. They're this lovely, you know, swim team family that goes to church every Sunday, not our church. And he and his husband are just lovely parents. And so I look at this, I'm like, now how is this destroying society and ruining my marriage again? Why is this the number one issue of all the sins and causes to choose? Why do they throw all of my tithing money and all their clout into this instead of like fighting child rape or the sex slave industry? Really, gay marriage is the existential threat to our way of life. Marriage that turns lovely people into monogamous parents, PTA members, and property taxpayers. This is the problem.
And that's exactly – this wasn't an issue until gay marriage became legal across the country – across the U.S. country, because if it was really an issue, they would have done this 10 years ago when the European countries were legalizing gay marriage. So it's one thing to deal with homosexuality. This really is an attack on the legitimized relationships and families. So this is truly an attack on one class of families that exist in the world and has gained legitimacy, which is what makes it so freaking nefarious.
Yep.
All right, let's plow through this thing.
Heather, would you keep? I think you're a rock star, and we would be lucky to have you continue to read this.
Thank you. Our concern with respect to children. You know, I can't read it. I can't read about children in that voice.
I wasn't asking.
Nobody asked you to, Heather. That was all on you.
Yeah. Right.
All right. I know my power. I know my superpowers. Our concern with respect to children is their current and future well-being and the harmony of their home environment. The provisions of Handbook 1, Section 16.13, that restrict priesthood ordinances for minors apply only to those children whose primary residence is with a couple living in a same-gender marriage or similar relationship. As always, local leaders may request further guidance in particular instances when they have questions.
Okay.
So, is this just a bold-faced lie right here? Because they didn't.
They could have said primary. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that hard to make that distinction in the hand, or maybe it was just a brain fart. They're old. They didn't think it through when they put it in the handbook and rushed it out, and they weren't using the peep stone. They weren't using the seer stone on this one.
Well, I think it isn't over yet. I think the problem is that. In execution, the handbook text, to my knowledge, hasn't been updated or changed. So is this going to have to be like stapled into it or in the back or something? Or are they actually I mean, maybe it's a small distinction, but I want to know, are they going to change the actual text, which is at odds with what they're saying in this open letter? Because the two are very different. So you can't just say, like, what we meant is this, when what you originally wrote is something fundamentally different, and you know that. So
right.
You have to change the original.
Right.
And again, yeah. You could have, if that's what you meant, you would have, you could have, would have, should have put that in there. All you had to put is one word, primary. And you knew. Those discussions were had. Who do we mean by this? Who do we want this to affect? We want this to affect any child who has a parent, natural or adopted, that is in the same gender. Not if they're their primary residence, not if it's their only residence, which they also could have used. So, again, this is not just... This is a lie. This is an out-and-out lie.
Yeah.
And I also had a question, what does primary mean? And Scott responded to my query in the email. You know, does primary mean if it's in a 60-40? Is this in the divorce situation? Mm-hmm. I mean, 60-40, joint primary, or sorry, joint equal time, equal decision-making, or if in some case it's the one parent gets final decision-making. What does it mean? I mean, these have real, in the divorce context, there are real meanings as to what some of these terms mean. And primary, I don't know what that necessarily means in each state as these complicated issues come up in divorces. What?
Did Scott have an answer? Sorry, Heather.
Yeah, he was the one that kind of fleshed that. He was the one that said, right, it depends. It is... All these scenarios, you know, are if you're in a joint, if you have a joint custody agreement, there's almost always one parent that has. It's very hard to do it completely, you know, 50% of the time. There's usually a logistical issue that makes children spend more days of the year in one than another for whatever reason. But so does that mean it primary? I don't know. That's.
These are the
questions that are left unanswered.
And can you imagine what that question is going to be as these local leaders are requesting further guidance? They're like, I've got a kid here who spends 180 days. Is that too many, you know, with this family? Is that too many for him to get baptized? If they knock it back to 175, can he be baptized?
Right. That's so
right.
Ridiculous.
And that's going to be, I mean, that's like what Scott brought up with the interview that he did with the guys that was released today. This is referring to like legal residency status. So this is going to have implications for custody battles and how those go forward. Like the idea that this somehow protects the church from litigation or is used to protect the children, all it does is raise the stakes in a custody agreement so that they can squeak under this, whatever this fucking primary residence bullshit is, and still be able to go to get baptized or whatever.
Yeah. And in the spirit of not getting in the way of families or trying to, you know, do what's best for the children. There are a lot of people who get divorced and it's amicable and they're working out these conditions on their own terms. But now the church is reaching in and saying, no, 4 days a week is too much. It has to be 3 days a week if you're the gay parent. And that puts a lot of pressure on the active believer to be kind of a dick, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
Mm-hmm. On the church's behalf, and because, you know, otherwise the kid can't get baptized, and I don't know. It just is like, for as much as they're trying to protect the family, all they're doing is mucking it up and getting involved in any family that's in this situation. It's
well, in many divorce decrees, the gay parent will agree that the child will be raised LDS. And so then that gives now that with this policy now arms the believing parent to say, ah-ha-ha, because he agreed to that, that's an agreement, a binding part of our divorce decree. In order to affect that, we have to modify it to give me more time with my kid to ensure that I'm primary. So it mm-hmm. really does
right.
give him leverage.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think some courts would buy that, depending on where you are, depending on the. I mean, hell, you just had a judge in Utah take a foster kid away from a yeah. lesbian couple because he found the big key. This is the key you find in family law: is best interests of the child. So that's all they have to find in order to make certain decisions, and it will be easy for certain judges in certain areas to make that finding if this is used.
Right.
God.
Hey, Scott wants to get on.
Oh, let him on
here.
Yeah. Bring him on.
Hey, Scott.
Hi.
Scotty boy.
Hey, everyone.
You sound really happy. What's going on here? What's going on in your life?
I don't know. Nothing.
Right. This is good timing, though, Scott, because I think you touched on it in your interview, and we were talking about the likelihood of a believing parent prevailing by saying that the divorce decree says that everyone agreed that the child would be raised LDS. In order to meet that portion of the divorce decree, I now have to have more than 50-50 or more than joint. I have to be the sole or the final decision maker or whatever.
Right.
Use that in order to modify the decree. What's the likelihood, do you believe, of not just of people trying to do that? I think the odds of people trying to do that are 100%, but the odds ultimately being successful.
Very low. Essentially what that would do is it would mean that the legal decision-making controls the parenting time, which just isn't the way that the courts look at it at all. They figure those two things out independently, so to say that, oh, you have to have this, you know, X amount of parenting time with your child in order to meet a certain legal decision-making goal, it's just not likely. I think it's very, very unlikely that it would be persuasive to a judge. So this is definitely going to increase the number of people that are trying to get more than 50% time for that reason. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But for people that already have a written decree, I'd be very surprised if this alone were the reason for a change.
Well, that's good. And let's hope that's the case. Unfortunately, I'd be afraid that we have to at least get one appeal in order to, because it wouldn't shock me for some judge to go off the reservation and make that.
Oh yeah,
that
sure.
Decision.
Right.
And actually, Scott, where you can pick up reading is most relevant to the interview that you did. For the first of the two, it's the paragraph that starts, "When a child living," and they've already been baptized. That one.
When a child living with such a same gender couple has already been baptized and is actively participating in the church, provisions of section 16.13 do not require that his or her membership activities or priesthood privileges be curtailed or that further ordinances be withheld. That's a really long sentence. Decisions about any future ordinances for such children should be made by local leaders, with their prime consideration being the preparation and best interests of the child. So now we've got a third class of kids that,
yes.
that are the grandfathered yes. class, which are the ones that are currently living with the same gender couple, but they're already baptized. So if you're a 7-year-old, then too bad you didn't make it. You didn't make the deadline. It was November 13th, 2015, as it turns out. So if you didn't make the deadline, that's too bad.
That's what God wanted.
Right.
Well, what about this? So they say, okay, future priesthood privileges be curtailed or further ordinance be withheld, period. Okay. But then it says, but decisions about any future ordinances for such children should be made by local leaders, with their prime consideration being the preparation and best interest of the child. So it says, okay, they should not, further ordination should not be withheld, but we're going to leave that to the discretion of the local leader.
Well, it doesn't.
They're not, they should.
It doesn't say should not. It says the policy does not require.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
In the previous clause, in the way they describe the boundaries of this policy, the way they word every boundary is, here's the minimum amount of discrimination you need to employ, but feel free to do more. Like
right.
it's the one, it says the provisions only apply to children whose primary residence is with a couple living in the same gender marriage or similar relationship. So you have to bar at least those people. As always, local leaders may request further guidance in particular instances when they have questions.
All right,
so,
I'm feeling Hulk smash on this now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I'm done.
No, you did. Uh-huh. I know you did. Bryan Cranston, go.
Well, no, but I'm done. I finished saying what I was
saying. Okay, it doesn't require it, now that Scott points that out. Decisions about any future ordinance should be made by local leaders. And shouldn't the footnote there say, see Handbook of Instructions 1? Defer to our freaking handbook that says they're not to be advanced, you gosh dang it! Oh, this is such... Oh, my gosh. This is such smoke and mirrors. Because even if you have... So then it's also the leadership roulette. So, you've got a guy in Palo Alto who's not going to follow this policy, so they don't. But you know the rank and file are going to be like, okay, I have the discretion. Let me see. The handbook of instructions says this. My hands are tied. Yeah. Okay. Serenity now. Serenity now.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's be clear. I mean, these situations, like the two guys that I interviewed, these are situations where both parents are already in agreement that the kids are going to be raised by this. So this is the church again telling them, no, we don't want you. It doesn't matter that you've been baptized into the church necessarily. It doesn't matter that both of your parents want this, that they're both supportive of it. The church is saying no. We don't necessarily want those kids
because the church is led by prophecy and revelation, Scott. And these parents don't know that there is going to be discord that comes as a result of their cooperation. So that the church is just heading off the future potential discord, right? You see where I'm going with that?
No, because
I'm intentionally being stupid.
Does anybody else feel like we need like a flannel board, like Plan of Salvation style? That's like, and then yes, when the child of the gay parents is in 3 days a week,
Scott was going to do a flowchart for us.
I was actually thinking about doing a flowchart for this because it is so confusing now. Which portions of the original policy flow through, which of those are still completely in effect, and then which, what are the new circumstances under this clarification? It's just an utter disaster.
I'm just angry how cute they think they are that they got this over. The policy still is in effect when you give discretion to leaders that are directed to follow the handbook trumps.
Yeah. Well, sort of. Here's the thing, though, I know this because a family member has been in one of these callings. They do have a book that they have to keep, that they have to maintain, that all of these letters go into.
Right.
Okay. So if there's an issue on one of these policies, they'll go and look at the letters as well that do this, that clarify it.
Sure.
Now, if they're changing the policy in the manual, and then they're clarifying it like, a week later when it's been this huge news story, why didn't they just change it in the handbook itself?
Well, and in the language of the handbook, I don't think we've pointed out the ways in which – have we pointed out when it specifically contradicts the language of the handbook? For example, in the previous paragraph, it said the provisions that restrict priesthood ordinances for minors apply only to those children whose primary residence is this couple living in the same gender marriage. But the handbook language, which has not been changed, this is just a clarification of that language, ostensibly. The handbook language says a mission president, stake president, may request approval from the office of the First Presidency, baptize and confirm, ordain, or recommend missionary service for a child of a parent who has lived or is living in a same gender relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's directly contradictory on that.
Yeah.
But in that case, you'd have to say that this clarification trumps the handbook as it pertains. If they contradict one another, you go with the clarification, right?
But a clarification should not contradict. If they contradict, that's called a revision. That's not a clarification.
Well, we don't know that they're not going to revise it. It just they're all just shooting from the hip right now. Anyway, they got this out. They may very well go in and change the language in the handbook of instruction. I think we're arguing about the wrong things here because they're still saying we're doing all of this
to be in the best interest of the child. And this next paragraph I want to read, because this is what makes me really angry. All children are to be treated with utmost respect and love. Even though we're not doing that for all children, we're going to say it right here. And then you guys, because you're our faithful followers, are just going to smile, bow your head, and say yes. That they're not doing it. It pisses me off.
This is the most Orwellian sentence in the whole document. I mean, who in their right mind would say this out loud without, like, everyone being like, what did you say? That's the weirdest thing to say.
Like, this pisses me off so bad. So all children are to be treated with utmost respect and love. They are welcome to attend. Well, they're welcome. They're welcome to attend church meetings and participate in church activities. We'll have Rice Krispie treats. They can have as many Rice Krispie treats as they want. We're not going to keep them away from the kids. All children may receive priesthood blessings of healing and spiritual guidance. May the Lord continue to bless you in your ministry. You know, like, no. Look, this is
the church. It's like black people in the 70s. Like, you can come and attend.
Every time there's an 8-year-old kid that gets baptized, there's speakers that say, you are now the most clean person in the whole church right now. Can you feel how clean you are? And now you're going to get the gift of the Holy Ghost, and that's going to be a guidance and protect. And yes, we know that other people that aren't confirmed have the Holy Ghost, because the Holy Ghost confirms truth, but he's not their constant companion. Like, he's going to be with you now, and he's going to be your little Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder to help you through life, and that's going to be the greatest protection that we can give you until you're able to get endowed and have garments and all these other greater things that'll come later. This is what we're giving to protect you, kids, because this is Jesus's love that you're receiving through baptism, except there's now this group of kids that, even though it says all children are to be treated with the utmost respect and love, it's not all children anymore. And why are we singling out the children? They still haven't said why they're singling out the children. They're just smoothing it over so that people won't ask these kinds of questions anymore.
But it's because they're
off.
There's this notion underlying this that of contagion. They still think that gay is contagious.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing this.
Or acceptance of gays is contagious as well.
Yes. That's it. It's the sympathy with gays is their number one – is the number one enemy of bigotry, and they want to institutionalize that bigotry. This is they're a fucking hate group.
Right.
I'm serious. Yeah.
They want to make sure that the kids know that this is really, really bad and it's not acceptable. Fine. Teach that. I mean, and it's not fine. It's not fine to teach that. But you can teach that without withholding the ordinances from the kids and sending these completely contradictory messages that we love them with respect and blah, 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 but we're not going to empower them with the same type of protections that we give to other 8-year-old kids.
They are the polite Westboro Baptist Church. They just don't use the F word.
They're like the bizarro Westboro, because they'll hold up signs saying, or put things up on their website saying, all children should be treated with love and respect.
Right. At least the Westboro, they own it.
We love all children.
Yeah. So Jake, like, you and I don't want to pile on your mom, but you brought up the example earlier of how she's thinking, okay, well, maybe the gays are worse than we thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. What about the kids? What about the kids of the gay people? Does she then think that there's something wrong with them? Is it the contagion thing? Have you had that conversation with her?
I haven't pushed her far enough to say that explicitly, but it's just the notion that she's gone as far as to say that there's something about being raised in a gay household, being gay adjacent, being gay adjacent.
Yeah.
Is something that is so That it's ability to warp your sense of right and wrong and to warp your ability to live the gospel is so strong, so singularly strong, that they're not ready to make those covenants yet because they're too mind fucked within that gay household.
They are the ones who need it the most. Then they're the ones who need the gift of the Holy Ghost to live with them in that house with all this horrible stuff around them. No, why are you denying that from them? What is giving them the Holy Ghost going to do that is going to not protect them or put them in a more difficult situation?
Because they could get gay-tagen.
It's going to get the Holy Ghost gay then?
No, it's maybe that's what it is. Okay, no, it's something where it's if they sin against the covenants that they made, they're worse off than if they had never made them in the first place.
Yeah, but
no, there's
that. I mean, that's the way that she. That's the explanation I'm getting.
There's the other thing I heard, and a family member put this out there. Actually, quoted somebody else that, and it's embarrassing to say that it came from a family member. It's that bad, but that. Terrorists will strap bombs.
Okay, you can stop right there. You can stop right there.
Yeah. No, I want to hear it now.
They will strap bombs to children and send them to blow up their enemies. And that's essentially what these gays with their gay agenda are going to do with their children. They're going to send them to infiltrate the church in order to destroy it from within. What, this is really what some people believe.
What was that really awful quote from the Hans Mill massacre in early church history where somebody...
Nits make lice.
This is the nits make lice policy come right back. I mean, to show how completely awful the Mormon church has become, now we're the ones storming into Hans Mill saying, where are the gay kids? Nits make lice.
The thing I really think it is, though, is it's less that, you know, the destroying the nits that become nets. It's these kids force members to have a real faith.
Okay, Matt, I got to stop you right there because they are still welcome to attend church meetings and participate in church activities and have the Rice Krispie treats and spread their tolerant cooties.
As like, long as they are ostracized and have pink.
The only thing that this does is keep them off of the official membership records because they can't have a name and a blessing as a baby. They can't be baptized. They can't be confirmed. You know, like, they can still associate with them on a regular basis.
But with a scarlet letter.
Yeah. As another.
You know what that
But
you know
the kids
means?
Don't know. I mean, the kids don't know. Kids don't. I mean,
stop.
They're not gonna,
oh, yeah.
All no, oh, right. Yeah. No 12-year-old thinks it's weird when they can't pass the sacrament when all their friends do.
Well, that's right. A point. That's a point. That guy's example.
Dennis's example.
I was thinking of girls, Bob.
Oh, yeah, they don't
oh,
know.
Yeah, they don't do
girls.
Things.
Yeah.
Dennis's example of the Nikes. Oh, Dad, I got to wear the Nikes because all the cool kids wear Nikes is a great example. That happens all the time. We bought my daughter a style of pants. She says, "Oh no, I can't. I don't. Nobody wears those anymore." You know, that type of a thing. So, anything you do that's different absolutely has an effect on these other kids. Don't be like that different kid.
But you think that difference is going to delegitimize any tolerant attitudes that they might have towards homosexual because they'll say, oh, well, the reason that kid's different is because his parents are gay and that's why he can't have the stuff that we have and do the things that we do.
No, I'm sure it's not.
I'm starting to believe
I think that's part of it.
It makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. Going to be sarcastic. It didn't happen with black people. That certainly didn't permeate the attitudes that members had towards black people. Yeah, yeah. It absolutely will.
It does actually turn the welcome and the invitation into kind of a nominal invitation. It's kind of like, yeah, we're going out later. You can come if you want, but it's not going to be that cool. And, you know, like that's what it is. Even though they're saying
you're not going to be trespassing if you try to come to church.
Exactly. I mean, you're welcome to attend. You're probably not going to enjoy it very much. I mean, go ahead and stay home. That's what it is.
Yeah. And I think they know anybody who's treated this way, the effect is they won't be there. And I come back to they don't want a real face of a legitimate relationship, a product of a legitimate relationship, because at the end of the day, no kid that is being ostracized and is being scarlet lettered is going to attend. They know that.
Can they take the sacrament?
No, they're not members.
But, oh, that's a good question. That's not been clarified anywhere. We need another letter.
Well, right.
No, the DNC does say don't allow people who haven't taken covenants to take the sacrament, but it's never enforced.
What about little kids that are already taking it? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. The pre-8-year-old. It's not enforced. Yeah.
Right. So, but their members on the they have a record number. These kids wouldn't.
So
I remember, one of our second or third episodes, we had this guy on, Mike. You remember Mike? That this was one of his reasons that he thought that the Mormon Church was in apostasy is because they allow children less than 8 to partake of the sacrament.
Oh yeah,
so that's why he and his wife did the sacrament in their home. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Mike. But that was a little nuts.
It was. So I have a question. It feels like there's a member mind fuck that could happen here that we haven't talked about, which is
your mouth, Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry, a member mind freak. So
we're not swearing, Scott. Just so you know.
Okay.
So what does this mean for the way our friendly apostle stated it? He made it seem like Christofferson. He made it seem like everything would be made whole. It's no big deal that through your teenage years and all that, you're not conflicted. You're obviously siding with your gay parents. But he made it seem like to the membership that he's talking to that, yeah, they can always come back and then make the decision then, and then nothing's been lost.
Yeah, but he said nothing will be lost to them.
Yeah, so what does that mean to all of the parents who are raising teenagers in the church? Because it seems to diminish the value of that.
Right. I could have had a lot more fun in high school.
Right. Well, unless they die before 18, then they lose an awful lot.
Yeah, seriously, I mean, our church is so, or the church, not our church, Jesus, I'm still saying that. the church is so, you know, so fixated on this moment of time being more important than the bazillion years before and the bazillion years after. But yet it's like, no big deal. This, you know, this key 20 years of your life, whatever, it'll be fine. You know, statistically, what are the chances that you'll die in that time window that's going to screw everything up?
Right. Bob, remember we had that Hell House discussion 4 years ago?
Yeah.
That was one of the stories. I think it was from you, or maybe it was from Randy, that somebody was terrified that they would be killed in between ordinances or something like that. I don't know. There's this memory of that. But now you're opening up these kids to this, doctrinally, any child who's not baptized before the age of 8, it's all right if they die. I mean, that sounds worse than I mean it. They won't be forced into spirit prison. They can go right into spirit paradise. What about the over 8-year-old? You know, so now we're under 18, but they're the child of the gay parents, and they die before they have a chance of being baptized. I mean, I guess Christofferson says, don't worry about it. It'll all be taken care of. It'll be okay. But
that was a great impression, by the way. Very accurate.
I've been working on it.
Is Christofferson going through puberty?
No, he's a Muppet.
He's a Muppet.
He's a Muppet.
He's a Muppet.
That's the truth. Yeah,
he just sounds like Charlie.
I've been
Brown's
working
teacher
on it for our next general conference. Hi, I'm D. Christofferson. Pretty good. I don't know. I'm
Kermit the Frog there.
I think that fits perfectly.
Hey, who? Kermit the Frog here. That's my cousin.
That's good, dude. That was really good.
That wasn't bad. With my falsetto, I can probably do a Miss Piggy.
Yes. Let's just do it now.
The Muppet General Conference.
Let's stop the SmackDown.
We're done. Okay. Should we jump back into the Otterson?
We should probably. Actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Other than the weird use of the word ministry, I'm like, we use that word. Okay. Whatever.
So I did want to ask, how significant do you think the timing is of this, considering there's not just resignations ongoing, but the planned?
Oh, tomorrow. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huge, right?
Yeah, yes. I think so.
Do they really think they're going to curtail any? Like, who's who?
No, yeah, I think so. I think they're thinking, hey, you guys, before you throw all this away because you think this extends, and I think this comes up more towards the end of the website. We're turning back to Otterson. I think he makes the point about it's much more narrow than we thought before. To say, look, it doesn't have all of these extended implications like you guys thought. So maybe you ought to rethink. Yeah, I think there's significance there, Matt.
It's also worse in the way that we pointed out, where now it matters the amount of parenting time that these parents have. So they're going to be then fighting over the kids in order to be able to have them proceed in the church or not. So right. Whereas the old policy, that wasn't the case. You know, Dennis brought that up, that his wife was feeling like she needed to do that. But at the time, that actually wasn't what the policy said. But the way it's written now, that makes perfect sense that a parent, you know, the straight believing parent would do that.
I think the most damaging thing, though, is the interpretation of what these ordinances actually mean to the 8-year-olds who receive them, to the babies who are blessed. You know, ordination to the priesthood, these things that are being denied to this narrow group of kids, like we'll talk about in a minute. Then what do those ordinances actually mean? Because it's not covered under "we love and respect all children."
Right.
So like, what is it? I mean, to me, that's the biggest concern, and they haven't even addressed it. They haven't even acknowledged that that's a problem.
So then by default, that goes back to my theory that it's a deflation of the doctrine, the core tenets of the church to everyone else. So even if you're not one of the gay kids affected, the fact that this is no big deal, doesn't that...
Yeah, it's like, do you even believe in your ordinances anymore? Just like they don't believe, what was it? I mean, I saw somebody picked up on Christofferson saying, "We feel this is what Jesus would do." Oh, really? He hasn't told you? You feel, you think so because you read the Bible and you think, "Oh, I think this Bible Jesus guy would probably feel this way." You know, they're so separated, they're so distant from what this church is at its heart in its core ordinances and doctrines and things, and it's such a corporation that they're running that I think that they're losing, that they can't even address the doctrinal significance. They're just like, yes, we're saying it, and we're going to use doctrine as a way to put a stamp on what we do, and that's it. But it's, I don't know. I think they're missing out on the core.
Yeah. Hey, what timepiece do you have? What time is it? Of the recording, because I'm going to say something you're going to probably want to cut.
A minute 15, or an hour 15, not a minute 15, an hour, right,
hour
15.
15. So good news, guys. John Larson, who has put Mormonism completely behind him, will be speaking at the mass resignation tomorrow.
Oh!
It's getting a rather large amount of press attention he posts. The more people we have there, the better it will look.
If you
want a chance to make a difference, this is it. Good job, John.
I can't blame the guy. I'd probably do the same thing.
Come out of retirement for the end of a lifetime.
Hey, can I do a victory lap? Hell yeah.
Victory lap?
Heck yes. The other point I wanted to make on this was the...
I don't have to cut that out, though, do I?
No.
No. That's fine. The people that are saying, oh, this really softens the policy and we're glad to see this, you know. Well, imagine if this clarification had been what they originally published, right? That's the litmus test. If this letter from the First Presidency was the first thing, it would still be awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? My point would still stand. I mean, it's still a barrier to getting baptized that, you know, some people have to disavow same-sex marriage, and that still hasn't been clarified.
Yeah, I saw somebody online said, oh, so now it's like wading through three feet of sewage instead of 6 feet.
Right.
No, I don't think the sewage has changed, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's different, but yeah.
The depth hasn't changed. The width has.
The viscosity.
The viscosity.
Right, right. It was diarrhea.
No, it's still. Now, it's still. It's still.
Now you got the floaters. Yeah. Now you got the floaters.
That's horrible. So, did you all see? Also, there was some talk about a spokesman wanting to suggest a more 6-month moratorium on resignations.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Let's let this calm down a little bit and let emotions subside. I thought that was just fascinating
isn't
was.
Isn't that illegal?
Yes.
Totally. Isn't that a rumor? I mean, do you know?
No, Salt Lake Tribune posted it as it was a statement from the kind of they're encouraging people to wait, let this play out, which is one, it shows that the timing of this is to stay what could be an embarrassingly number of resignations tomorrow. I mean, if they do 2,000, I think if they had 2,000, that would be just huge.
Right.
Yeah, we get 2,000 though downloads like in about what 3 hours after. That's not that big.
That's a very well listened to podcast. There, that's very.
I think that's a steak.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's significant. You've already had bishops that have come wrote the op-ed piece out of Atlanta. You've had you have the general president with the General Relief Society's son who came out just strongly against it. So it's already. So I think they're trying to do these things to stay. Resignations and more than anything, this please stop, take a breath. We are getting our asses handed to us right and left, and we can't take it anymore.
But that's the irony. Like, who was going to resign? Then they saw this bullshit and was like, oh, I'm not going to resign now. All better. It makes it worse. Like, none of this fixes anything. It just is digging the hole deeper. It's just doubling down, like we've already said.
We do have somebody, a listener, that is going to be there at the resignation. They're recording stuff. They said they're going to send us the audio.
All right.
So we can ask this question. Asking questions, what is their response to the 11th hour? Oh, here, let's clarification. You know, what stop or even make them think about things differently.
Yeah. We'll see if it's made me want to resign even more. So
me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
are you guys going to?
I am.
You are.
Are you?
Going to do it. Bob? Yeah. Yep.
Right. It's not tomorrow, just soon?
to be honest, it's I haven't looked into the process. Is it really as easy as like 15 minutes, or do I need to take some real time?
Well, Glenn started like and then he minutes. Couldn't finish, right?
Well, no, mine was a mini-sode open letter to the first presidency, like I did to the state president a year ago. But
it feels right. So if it's really easy anyway, tomorrow might be the day. So
yeah, you can email it. I just think. Cut out the middleman and go right to your bishop, hand it to him, say, no, I don't need a meet, but here you go, please process it.
I don't even know who my bishop is anymore, so I just email it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I can do that.
All right, let's head back to the Mormon newsroom here.
The prophets.
I think, Jake, you read after me?
Yeah, I think so. One difficulty was a general lack of understanding of the handbook itself, which is a guide for lay leaders of the church in 30,000 congregations across the world. A purpose of the handbook is to provide bishops and other leaders with a standard reference point when they make decisions. Because it is a policy and procedural manual, the handbook is not written in language that is necessarily contextual or explanatory.
Just instructive.
The handbook isn't explanatory.
Do they not think know what a handbook is? Like,
it's not necessarily explanatory. No, okay. This is something I remembered when my dad came and visited me, and he was here a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't give him too much crap for it because I was trying to keep things civil. But there's this line from maybe it's a Keats poem. I don't. It's not Keats. It's Charge of the Lightning Brigade that. Ours is not to question why. Ours is but to do and die. Have you guys heard this quote before?
I thought it was do or die.
No, it's do and die.
Yeah. Wow.
Because it's soldiers that are saying we're not to question the orders that we're given. We're just to go forward. And if we die, we die because that's what we're here to do. And my dad would always quote that to me as I was growing up, as it's like this noble thing. And there's also this scripture from Alma somewhere that's like, I know not, it has not yet been revealed to me, therefore I shall forbear. And that was like his go-to for every kind of, you know, put it on the shelf over there kind of thing. Don't question why, just do and die. And that's why there's no need, or what is the word here, necessary explanation?
Right, contextual or explanatory. No, that's why it's not written in language necessarily.
Because you don't need to know why. Yours is but to do and die. That's what this manual is all about. It's what the church is about.
It really frustrates me because the one place that I'm so familiar with the handbook of instructions is the instruction on how to deal with victims of sexual abuse. And they specifically told me, by they I mean the leaders of the church, Kurt and McConkie, specifically told me face to face, we don't provide specific training on these issues because we don't want the specific leaders to make decisions on their own.
Yeah.
We want them to just call so we can give them instructions. So that's why it's not meant to give any leeway to these leaders, to these bishops. It's just not.
Well, and it's already a big handbook. I mean, it covers everything. You know, that you every scenario that you could think of just about, it's already a book, big handbook. If they were to write context and, you know, an essay about every one of these topics, it'd be the thing would be enormous.
The context would just be like, in the margins, this paragraph is bigotry. This one here.
Right. Well, exactly. The problem, what people are reacting to is the policy itself. They're not saying... I mean, what explanation behind the policy justifies it? I haven't seen one yet. The problem is with the policy. It's like that Arrested Development clip where Tobias hands his business card to Buster, and it says, Analrapist on it. Buster looks at it and goes, ugh! And he says, oh, don't worry. And Tobias says, oh, don't worry. It's pronounced Analrapist. And Buster says, yeah, it wasn't really the spelling that bothered me. It wasn't the pronunciation that bothered me because it's spelled anal rapist. And so it's not that – I mean the explanation, the context isn't the problem. The problem is the content of the policy. That's right. What people are reacting against.
Because the context is, yeah, no, we seriously mean it. That's what it should say there. It was like D. Todd Christofferson. Yeah, we seriously meant it. That's context. That's explanation.
And they still have not, and they never do in here at least. I hope that they do someday, but I don't expect it. They've never explained how denying these ordinances really protect the kids. You know, they're framing it as we're protecting the kids from, you know, differing ideologies. Why does that take a precedent over these saving ordinances? How?
Yeah, and if the kids
answer that.
Right. And if the kids are living with one parent who is a believing Mormon and another parent who is gay and in a committed relationship, they're probably getting exposed to different ideologies already.
Yeah.
Like this isn't, you know, keeping the kids in a glass bubble to say that, oh no, you can't do this under these circumstances. It's not, I mean, there's no justifiable argument that the reason they're giving is the actual reason. There's no way that makes sense.
And that's one of the things that's so infuriating, that it's such a stupid, hollow explanation as to why they're doing this. And it goes unquestioned.
Right. Well, and they don't explain how it's not inconsistent with the second article of faith.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
which one is that?
Adam's.
And will be punished for their own sins and not spread.
Yeah, Mosiah 13:13.
Which one
he did
that?
Make a good point. That was the one that you quoted in your You Got a Friend in Me, right?
Yeah. We pick and choose, boy.
We pick and choose. Yeah. That was one of my favorite lines.
But angry God does punish the children to the third and fourth generation of those that hate him.
Right, and that was – that. You know, and I'm such an idiot because that was the argument against why it makes no sense for the blacks – the ban on the priesthood
and all the anti-Semitism about Jews.
Yeah,
you know. So anyway,
you're right.
Okay,
you're right.
Okay, all right.
Men shall be punished for their own sins and for their fathers' transgressions.
Yeah, but it's no punishment to be denied baptism or the confirmation, I guess.
Right, because they're not that important.
Because they love and respect them in spite of denying those things to them.
They can have blessings of healing.
Yeah. Right.
So, and Rice Krispie treats.
So if you're the gay parent and your ex-spouse tries to pull this out in court and says, I need to keep the kids in and I need to have them extra time, you can just quote Christofferson saying it doesn't really matter if they're in the church or not.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
He totally supports them.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, it was Alfred Lord Tennyson who wrote the poem "The Charges."
Charges. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna keep going. Church leaders are encouraged to use the handbook in conjunction with the guidance of the Holy Ghost.
They didn't have gay parents,
exactly.
They were denied it. Yeah.
Right. Sensitivity to individual circumstances is learned through the Spirit. Christ's teachings, except for the ones that tell us that this is a poor policy. An example is found in the scriptures from talks and teachings of general authorities and from leaders' own experience and exposure to real-life situations. No handbook can answer every question or address every circumstance.
Except this particular policy did not give you discretion, bishops and stake presidents. It says you must get permission from the first presidency.
But that, it's such a red herring statement anyways. Yes, you're right. No handbook can answer every question and address every circumstance. We're not asking about those. We're not asking about every question and every circumstance.
How about this
one? Trying to sweep this away, Otterson.
Right, damn you. Right, exactly. And the thing is, if you look at the language of the initial of the handbook change and of this letter of clarification from the First Presidency, the only leeway is given on the side of discrimination, of expanding the discrimination. The boundaries of the language say these are the people you have to bar. There are other people you don't necessarily have to, but feel free to do so.
That's a really good point. It's like, at your own discretion, make this worse than it really is.
Exactly. It's not – so it doesn't – like Glenn says, saying just pulling out the fact that, no handbook can do it, can answer every question, and this is and there's some discretion, that doesn't solve the problem, which is the minimum criteria for this policy is exclusionary in a way that's totally unacceptable and cruel.
Well, but an ant can't understand how a TV works, but it still works.
Sure.
Is this actually how the handbook works and how it's taught and trained is here's the handbook and you don't have to follow it. Like, just go off your own experience and no. Christ's teachings or whatever. Because I believe that it's taught, here's the handbook, follow everything in here. And if something is not covered, then ask us, right? Because that's something different.
Yep. So doublespeak here.
Yep.
Right, because they call bishops, stake presidents, and other leaders who are so good at just doing their own thing and not following the
Yeah, that's always who they call, is the people who go off their lived experience.
Right.
So who's going to read the three pattern?
Bob.
All right. Here are the key points to understand his background to the recent changes and additions to the leader's handbook. It is not a sin simply to feel attraction to another person of the same sex. Some faithful members of the church experience those attractions, yet participate in the church without breaking the Lord's commandments. They serve missions and attend the temple. The church teaches its members to embrace these brothers and sisters and encourage them in their faithful lives in the church.
Okay, we gotta stop on this one, though. if it's not a sin to simply feel attraction, what is that saying? Like, what is the source of those feelings?
Somebody say Jesus?
I feel like a seminary answer. It felt like it was a seminary question.
Is this an acknowledgement that people are born gay and they just are gay?
I don't think they're saying that. They're just saying this is a feeling that some people get sometimes.
If you haven't had any food and you want to eat, you feel hungry.
Yeah, or like if it's been a while and you see a really cute guy and you're like,
Okay.
That happens all the time.
Right. As
Honey Boo Boo says, everyone's a little gay.
I guess. So, but I mean, these are the things that just infuriate me, that they skim past it without double clicking, to use a Bobism, one of my favorite Bobisms. Like, this deserves double clicking on. Say, can you explain why it's not a sin to feel this way? And what does it mean to feel this way, or to think this way, or to be this way? Is that all the same thing? So are they saying it's, the Book of Mormon thing, it's not to be gay, but just to act gay?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's like, it's not a sin to like the smell of coffee. It's not a sin to like coffee flavored ice cream. Right?
To want coffee.
Yeah, too bad. Tom isn't here to tell us about it.
Yeah.
All right, so second one. There is no change in the doctrinal position that sexual relations between people of the same sex are sinful. Bullshit.
You
think this is a change in the doctrine?
It's an escalation, but it doesn't change. It doesn't reverse it.
No, but by making it fall under the category of something that's apostasy, it elevates it.
It doesn't change the doctrinal position. Well, I mean, maybe it elevates the position of that sin over others,
But it,
well,
I mean,
even like Elder Christofferson's brother, when he gave his interview about this, when he was coming back to activity in the church, he was still living with a man, and he was welcomed to come back to church, right? And now it's saying that he would have been in apostasy. I think that it is something that's different now. Now that it's like res ipsa loquitur, this is apostasy without any question.
Yeah, but even
exactly.
But even if he was excommunicated for apostasy, they would still encourage him to come because maybe he would eventually see the light and the gay would be prayed away. You know, so they're not like shutting the doors. Remember, they're still welcome to come.
Yeah.
I think this is a true statement.
I don't know. I have a theory on why they included the gay marriage in the definition of apostasy, and I think it actually has to do with the temple questions. So when they ask you the temple questions, they ask you if you support or align with any organizations or groups or people that have teachings that are in direct contradiction of the church.
Oh.
So I think by shoehorning the marriage into the definition of apostasy, they're making it so that people who openly support gay marriage are not able to answer the temple recommend question the way that they want to.
Okay, so here's a free piece of unsolicited advice for the church. When you communicate this point to your bishops and stake presidents that this is how you want them now to interpret that question, don't write it down.
Okay, so the next one. There is new information in the handbook that addresses a narrow range of situations involving the children of same-sex couples. Yeah. No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah. We wrote something.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, but the key word there is the narrow range of situations.
Yeah.
Say, it's not as broad as all of these sensationalist ex-Mormons and media whores put out as. It's a narrow range.
But you know what's bullshit about that?
The ones that are tied to gays.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really bullshit about that is that this
straight and narrow.
This applies. This sets the tone for how gay people are treated in the church. You know, it's honestly, there's probably more of an effect on members writ large that have nothing to do with any of these gay families in terms
yes.
of how they think about people. This yeah. affects the whole cultural zeitgeist of the mindset of how do we treat gay people within the church on a broad level.
Right.
Absolutely.
But Scott, that's completely true, but that's not what this sentence is saying. The sentence is saying the information in the handbook addresses a narrow range of situations.
Right, yeah. But the implication is throughout the church is church-wide.
Right. How is gay marriage even worse than I thought? How is it even more of an existential threat than I originally thought, these wonderful people getting married? Just, it's fucking ridiculous. This is such a fucking bigoted thing. I'm sorry, we're swearing. Freaking.
Why are we not swearing again?
I don't know.
I thought it was funny when Glenn wouldn't swear, and so I was just picking it up.
Right. Oh, okay. Thought we were going to try to make this something people could share, but I think we're long past. Share this with your believing friends. Yeah.
That's what the Disney songs are for.
That's right.
Answer.
All right. So next paragraph.
Matt?
With same-sex marriage now legal in the United States and some other nations, the church felt the need specifically to address such marriages in the handbook to draw a firm line and encourage consistency among local leaders. Wait a minute. But I thought they were supposed to use the Holy Ghost.
Their own discretion.
Right. And it's been the law in Canada for like 10 years, so they're a little bit behind the times here in terms of, you know, addressing inconsistencies between how so that's do put down.
That's why you have a handbook, guys. We get it. Because you don't want you just don't want bishops going on their own and making decisions. So thank you for finally acknowledging what we've been saying this whole time.
This is the first time I've seen something that so explicitly acknowledges that things in the handbook, which go out to everybody, all of the handbook language is unified across every version of it, every language. This is pushed out to everybody, and it's driven by political stuff in the United States. This is the first time I've seen them acknowledge that the political climate in the United States, you know, current events in the United States drive worldwide church policy.
Hmm. Right.
Right. Yeah, they try to bury that by adding, yeah, and in other countries.
Some
but,
other nations, yeah.
But that's only for people who don't think about what's being said.
Right.
Okay, I need that back.
Okay, where are
okay.
we?
Okay.
That's in the middle of the paragraph.
Yeah.
In particular.
In particular, church leaders are concerned for children, whether biologically born to one of their partners, adopted or medically conceived. In reality, very few same-sex couples would bring children for the formal church ordinances of naming. See, so this policy really is meaningless, is what we're saying.
They don't even like us, so yeah, fuck them.
Since this creates a formal membership record, but church leaders want to avoid putting little children in a potential tug of war between same-sex couples at home and teachings and activities at church.
Oh. Ah! This is what makes me melt down.
Yes.
Which part? Wait, we have to address the first one that's like, black people wouldn't want to go to the restaurant that's run by white people. I mean, that's not a big deal anyway. It's a small set of people who'd actually want to go in. So, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, except the sign on the outside says, visitors welcome, right? And there's this teaching I seem to remember from the New Testament where Jesus was, like, accepting to people that were in, you know, other circumstances that were looked down upon in society, that he was pretty nice to them.
No, he says, go thy way and sin no more. nice try, hippie Jesus lover.
Right. Oh, shot down. Yeah. Wow.
And then the last sentence, the church leaders want to avoid putting little children in a potential tug of war between same-sex couples at home and teachings and activities at church. Yes. Okay, one, the only time these things can happen is if both parents are in agreement. They've already have the policy that right. says this. They already have a policy that says both parents have to be in agreement to do these ordinances. Therefore, the only people that this policy could possibly apply to are situations in which both parents already want this.
Yeah,
right.
There is no tug of war. It can only apply
right.
that they're both on the same page. The church is the one coming in and saying, let's make a tug of war. I bet you guys don't really want this kid in the church.
Yeah. Let's draw a line in the sand.
And that's the strangest yeah. thing, because in you're right, creating the conflict in the first place, creating this tug of war, they're not siding with their believing ally. They're siding on the side of maybe it's the you know, they're suggesting here that the gay couple wouldn't want their kid to be baptized or at least at the very general level isn't in accordance with the harmony and the spirit of the gospel, right?
Right.
And so they're saying we're going to let the kid go that way. Let go of the rope. Stop the tug of war. You go over there on the losing side, and you know when you're 18, come back and if you don't believe any of that, then we'll let you back.
Is this an admission of defeat? Is this the church just saying, like, we're so screwed, guys? I mean, the only thing we can do is just retrench and become a cult. And so let's all in favor. All right. That's what's going to happen.
You know what I think is the most tone deaf part of this is that they don't and I'm honestly kind of guilty of this, too. Because I don't think I fully understood this as much until recently, but they don't understand that there's a difference between being gay and coming out as gay and losing a belief in the church. Those aren't the same things. So there's people out
right.
there, there's plenty of people out there who are gay, who own their sexuality. They might even be in one of these relationships, and they're still believers.
Right.
Okay. It's just like Mormon.
Right. Yeah. No, because they've been taught their entire life to pray to Heavenly Father and develop a personal relationship with Heavenly Father and follow the promptings that you're feeling. And so they're just supposed to turn that off and not have any meaning to them anymore.
Right.
And
they don't is the thing. They get
right.
they get divorced, they get into new relationships, and they are not like us, at least not all of them. They're not like us that are people that have had faith crises and left the church for other reasons. These are people who have left the church reluctantly in a lot of times
right.
just because their circumstances don't really allow it. But they might – like, I mean, listen to the interviews that I did with Dennis and Kristen. They're both like way more pro-church than I am. You know,
yeah.
like they're totally fine with their kids going to church and the church is stepping and saying, these kids, they don't want to be here anyway.
My wife's had a conversation with a gay guy who started to, you know, I decided I'm going to have a boyfriend. And she said, oh, good for you. That's great. And he's like, no, I'm not like you. I still believe. I'm doing this so I can be happy.
Okay.
Not because I don't believe. No. He talks with a lot of gay people, okay,
right.
Glenn?
Right. Which is getting her hair done. Where else would it be?
Yeah, her hairdresser.
All right.
We're back.
This sensitivity, so much sensitivity. There's just so much of this sensitivity. This sensitivity to family circumstances is practiced elsewhere. For example.
So see, there's proof. We really are.
Yeah.
It's not just here that we're so sensitive, you guys. There's other places too.
Because we called it sensitive, yeah. Therefore it is.
Yes.
For example, the church doesn't baptize minor children without parental consent, even if the children want to be associated with their LDS friends.
Which That's is so irrelevant, sentence. Because in this case, like you pointed out earlier, Scott, the parents are both agreeing they do want the child to be baptized.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The inverse scenario.
This is pointing out the contradiction that Scott did. You already need parental consent. So why the fuck is this? Why is there this extra hoop you have to jump through?
How is this helping their – yeah. This is a sensitivity of family circumstances. Yeah.
Well, and let's drive that point a little bit farther is think about all the other scenarios in which there could be this kind of struggle, right? So a parent who is heterosexual that has a live-in partner – there's no conflict there, apparently.
Yeah, I think I've identified another euphemism here because they say it's sensitivity to family circumstances. What they really mean is places where we side with the non-believer. There is a precedent for times where we side with and support the wishes of the non-believer or the non-Mormon. So in the case where there's parents that don't agree on their kids being baptized, we go ahead and we side on those who say
because they're legally required to.
Right.
But that's not a real precedent, right? Because they're using this as a precedent for the case where they're siding with the non-believer that they think would think this way, not the non-believer who's explicitly said, yes, I don't want my child in the church. Because as has been pointed out a million times, so many kids of these gay couples or of a single gay parent in a mixed faith family are totally fine with a kid going. So who are they siding with? How is this a precedent? How is A a precedent for B?
The only difference between the two is that in A or maybe B, the new policy, these are the non-members that they want to create and make non-members. You know, in the first situation where it's just two parents that don't agree, they're of their own free will not wanting the kid to be baptized. This one, the church is imposing that on the other person.
Exactly. Yeah.
A married man or woman isn't baptized if the spouse objects. Missionaries don't proselytize in most Muslim countries or in Israel, where there are particular sensitivities with family.
I don't know that that's true. A married man or woman isn't baptized if the spouse objects?
Yeah, no, that's true.
I'm sure that happened on my mission.
You probably didn't ask, but I think if there's a stated objection, then you're not supposed to.
Okay.
That's in the handbook.
Yeah, all right.
In some African... Oh, go ahead, Heather.
What's the objective there? Like, why isn't a married man or woman baptized if the spouse objects? Why not?
To prevent discord.
But it's again the legal thing,
isn't it? Accord, right?
It wouldn't be legal.
Somebody wants to be baptized and the other person won't let them. This is, you know, marital harmony.
Yeah, it's probably because the women used to need the man's permission, and then that got really sexist, and they were like, let's just do it both ways.
I'll tell you why it is. This is very cynical. Because they held out hope that maybe the man would come around, and they knew if they pissed off the man, then they'd lose him forever. He'd never want to join the church.
Mm. And they wanted the priesthood holder,
just like Heather talked about in her mission experience. And so let's extend them this olive branch and say, look, we're reasonable people. And so if you ever want to take the missionary discussions, you know, we're not that bad. We're on your side.
And then this makes this such an interesting argument because it's kind of a weird, ridiculous policy. And so it's saying, look, we do weird stuff all the time. It isn't just this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're always doing this crap.
Yeah. The next line is absolutely my favorite. Can I read it?
Yeah.
This
sure.
This is my favorite line of the entire piece. Mm-hmm. Missionaries don't proselyte in Muslim countries or in Israel or on the sun or on Mars.
You're adding those
places. Yeah, I'm adding those. Yeah.
Also, Glenn already read that.
Oh, he did?
That was me, but yeah, it was sorry.
I was on mute dealing with a family issue here. But so you guys covered that? Yeah, they don't proselyte there because those countries don't let missionaries
don't allow
in.
Them in.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Otterson. Sorry.
Yeah, and my dad went on his mission to the most populated Muslim country in the world. So that's kind of not applicable. But.
Not that.
It says most Muslim countries.
Yeah, most, just not the right. one.
He's careful with the way that he puts in his outs.
And parts of China. And yeah. I mean, yeah, right, dude. We get it. Yeah. Again, this is such. They are,
but it's liar. This is all it's liar. All deflection right now anyway. It's so far away from what the central point is. It's yeah,
yeah. In some African and other nations where polygamy is practiced, anyone whose parents practice polygamy needs special permission for baptism, so they know that a practice that is culturally acceptable for many in the region is not acceptable in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints
anymore.
Yeah. But that's also not stating the intricacies of like, well, but gays are worse than polygamists because you have to wait till you're 18 for polygamists. You can still get baptized when you're – it's like not a fair comparison if you really double click on it.
Right, right. And
I have a very close friend who was in this situation. He came from not the colonies but from Mexico. And Spencer W. Kimball did approve the family to get baptized, and Spencer Kimball was the one who said, "This will now be your wife, the one wife you will be married to. The other ones you won't be married to. The other brothers and sisters you guys won't call your brothers and sisters." They did direct it. So in that case, they did approve it, but broke up a family and just kind of it was
wow.
Really weird and tragic situation for them.
That was like in the 70s or 80s, right?
Yeah, it would have been 80s or yeah, early 80s.
Early 80s.
It was before the families and the children became the center point.
Right.
That happened yeah. after that.
Yeah.
Does it bother anybody the polygamy?
Sorry.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's so jarring to me to watch Elder D. Todd Christofferson talk about it and say, you know, homosexuality is a grievous, serious sin, like polygamy. Polygamy used to be our banner to the world. It used to be our anthem,
no.
You know, and it's a grievous sin now. I mean, is the irony lost entirely? Yeah. Nobody gets this?
And we still haven't changed our handbook of DNC 132.
Right.
That does... talk about how if you don't enter into, I mean, they've reinterpreted what it means, but it still says if you don't do it, you're going to be a ministering angel instead of a god.
Well, but it's a stupid out. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Somebody pointed out Elder Oak's children don't have to disavow his polygamy.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, that's...
Well, it's a stupid comparison anyway, because the reason why polygamists would be a suspect class is because people come from a polygamous background. That's a competing religion. That's a competing religious view that conflicts with present Mormonism, right? Whereas people who just happen to be homosexual aren't necessarily coming from a competing religious perspective.
No.
It's also illegal.
It's a competing belief system, and it's a competing value system.
But it's also illegal and always has been in the U.S., so you're saying, yeah, homosexuality is the same as this illegal practice in every state.
Right. Well, yeah, used to be illegal too. So.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Yep. Okay, two more paragraphs.
Whew, we're almost there. Back to you, man.
Me?
Of course.
Of course. There are always situations that fall outside general guidelines and principles, which is why local leaders may ask for guidance from more senior leaders in particular cases where they may have questions.
I.e. First Presidency.
Because the senior ones, kind of like the concept of the Tower of Babel, the higher you get, the closer you are to God. And so the junior leaders have to talk this to the senior leaders in order to get clarification, because the Holy Ghost thing that they mentioned before isn't really good enough all in and of itself. They've got to reinforce the hierarchy.
Isn't this just a bald – this is just a huge lie, because the handbook says you must go to – it's not like maybe if the Holy Ghost hasn't told you other – no. There are clear cases where you must. That's the only option. So unless he's rewriting the handbook.
It's a reminder to the general readers that there is a hierarchy.
But it's not optional.
It's important. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with what Bob's saying, because by bringing this up, he's implying, oh, there's some ambiguity here, so it's not as bad as it looks. But what he's talking about here are situations that fall outside the general guidelines. Our issue is with the guidelines.
Right.
Like the actual content of the policy itself specifically is what's being criticized here. We're not worried about the exceptions. We're worried about the rule.
Yeah, and the rule says you have to go to the first presidency. Okay, now it's a little softer because it's only if you have, 50% or more of the child's time with the gay parent or parents, but it's still the rule. It's not an optional may ask for guidance. No, it's the only option in the case of the rule that's in question. So, fuck you, church. Yeah.
Well, again, this just reaffirms that. The policy says you have to go to the first presidency. Audition says sometimes they have to go to senior leaders the first presidency. So this just affirms the policy once again.
Yep. Yeah. So who wants to take this god-awful closing paragraph?
I'll take it.
That's it.
No. Oh, it's Heather's turn, you guys. Yeah. Come on.
Sorry, not... Bring us home. Bring us home.
Okay, I have to open up this thing, too, because my computer crashed. Oh, gosh, where is it? All right, I don't have it. Go ahead and read it.
Bottle cap opener? Oh, you're looking for the webpage.
Yeah, I can't find it.
I got it. The vast majority of church members understand that there has been no doctrinal change with regard to the LGBT issues. And if you do, you're an idiot. Church doctrine is consistent with the life and teachings of Jesus Christ.
Really?
That's rich. There is a strong tendency today for many to talk of Jesus Christ as if his teachings on love were somehow inconsistent with his teachings on divine commandments.
Hippie Jesus lovers.
Right.
I told you.
He was there to tear families apart or to something like
that. Yeah, I bring not peace but a sword.
He cursed a fig tree for not giving him fruit.
Right.
I said, I hate figs, guys. Gosh.
Yeah, right.
Of course, the Savior's love was never withheld from anyone, and his words on the cross exemplify that. But he also expressed love by teaching clear doctrine and standing firm against sin, with sometimes tough lessons for which people rejected him. That is where church leaders stand today, holding firm to the doctrinal position of right and wrong while extending love to all people. Church members who believe in modern prophets and apostles understand and appreciate the intent of their leaders to guide the church through the complexities of diverse societies and rapidly changing social circumstances.
This is fucking bullshit. Oh my fucking God.
This is so bad.
Oh my fucking God. Yeah.
So we're swearing now?
I'm sorry. Obviously, I just crossed that line. I couldn't hold it anymore. This is so freaking insidious. Like,
you went a freak.
Yeah, I went.
I was kidding, by the way. Say it.
Shame. No, but I mix the freaks and the fucks in. You know, it's a fun little game. Okay. This is where church leaders stand today, holding firm to the doctrinal position while extending love to all people. Church leaders who believe in modern prophets and apostles, by invoking their prophetic mantle, this isn't a policy. There is no distinction between policy and doctrine.
Amen.
If there's no distinction, if you invoke their prophetic leadership, you're saying this is the will of God. There's no distinction. This is doctrine. There's no get out of jail free card here. This is like the church has become a hate group. I'm serious. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous.
I don't know if it's become it. It has been.
I guess. No, I think that this is a shift, though. I mean, I think that when you get to the point, I mean, all the rhetoric up to this point has been damaging, and I don't want to diminish that. But like when you get to a point where you say children of gay parents can't be baptized, and you and if you disbelieve this or if you doubt this, then you're going against the prophetic leadership. That, yeah. Like, there's a line that has been crossed here.
But these are lines that I think have familiarly been crossed at all points in the church's history. There's always been the us versus them line. The them and the other might change what they look like a little bit, but there's always been that. So I mean, I think the church has always been a hate group in that sense that there's others that they hate, and by hating the other, it kind of reinforces the interior group identity.
Right, but I mean this policy and this specific explanation for it, and the First Presidency explanation for it, because there's no further explanations. Like, they had one move to make. You get one action. You get to respond once to something like this. You don't get to continually chip away at it. So this is right now. It's set, man. This is the cement has hardened.
So hypothetical here. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. I'm just saying that this cements that it has become a specifically anti-gay organization.
Right.
Before, it was incidentally anti-gay. It was the accidental homophobe. They're intentionally bigoted now, and they're institutionally bigoted in a way that they weren't before.
Like, I think it's just more obvious, Jake. I mean, the proclamation on the family.
Right, more obvious.
All that, well, the Prop 8, you know, no, those were incidental things that happened.
No, but they were – I mean, I'm not saying they're incidental, but up until this point, it's been opposition to homosexuality has been couched in this idea of marriage or, you know, just it's a sexual sin, and yeah, there's no outlet for it in the same way that there's outlet for temptations toward heterosexual sin. So it's a little bit different in that way, but it's just an incidence. It's just a consequence of our standards on this other thing. Now they're incorporating a specific idea that we are against gay people, like, intrinsically.
Yeah. To me, it's like an Inside Out, the movie. You know how the little girl had, like, the personality islands, like, uh-huh, the goofy and the hockey and whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Now the church has, like, this island of its character that's anti-gay. Like, that's just mm-hmm, a component of what its a fundamental character is now.
And that's why there's outrage, is because there was the same sort of outrage over Prop 8. But then there seemed to be some kind of softening of the rhetoric and an idea that you could support, or that you could not be openly opposed to gay marriage. You could even support other people's rights to enter into same-sex marriages without being apostate yourself.
Right.
And now it's saying, no, you need to pledge allegiance.
Yeah.
So can we do a hypothetical exercise here? Let's say the church, because I think that the way this whole thing rolled out in the last 8 or 9 days is really interesting.
Yeah.
So the policy gets leaked, right? Then the church puts together this stupid video with Christofferson, and then they have to wait over a week to release this, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think would have happened if they, instead of releasing that video, if they'd taken a deeper breath and sort of looked at everything, and then instead of going at it in two shots, they'd just done it in one shot? Because I think the Christofferson video really set them up on a trajectory where they couldn't back down from it.
You're so right. Yeah.
And they immediately confirmed it with news media as well. So that even set up Christofferson for what he was doing when they confirmed it to the you know, Washington Post and
the Deseret News.
So doubled down on it, painted themselves into a corner, and now it's a contradiction, not a clarification.
Exactly.
And I think what that indicates, Scott, is that they didn't have this in their back pocket to do at the time that they did the Christofferson thing, or they would have done them together. Right. It took them this long to come up with this spin, which they're now saying this is what we meant all along, but you can see how disingenuous it is just by the execution.
Well, exactly. Not only did they not have it, but they hadn't contemplated it. So if they would have never sent Christofferson out there thinking that they were going to in
they
a
had
week
to.
Have
they
to
had
do this.
To. They had to do that immediate response to calm the panic, because it wasn't just people in the ex-Mormon community that were outraged by this. It was believing Mormons that,
right.
you know, very, I think very similar to the sentiment that Jake was just expressing, that I thought it was okay to say, okay, well, acting gay is a sin, but sinners or the gay people we love, and we're going to extend fellowship, and look, the rhetoric softening, and President Packer is dead now, and the younger generation is going to come along, and it's going to be much more tolerant, and, you know, they were like, wait a minute, what the heck is going on? So they had to do some immediate damage control and get, you know, Christofferson or some apostle out there, but they didn't have the messaging at that point.
And it was a swing and a miss.
It
like
was
it
a
didn't
swing
work.
And a miss.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. it just set
well,
them up on this.
It didn't
on
work
this
for who? There's people that it worked for.
Right. But, the people who were really believers needed to see an apostle up right. there so they could just eat it.
Thank you.
But it didn't shut down. It didn't shut down the news cycle. They wanted to do it. And I think this execution indicates two things. One, the policy that we saw wasn't a draft. That was the final policy. There are some speculations I've seen in kind of liberal Mormon circles where it's like, well, maybe that was like, maybe they leaked like a preliminary draft of the policy, and the final thing would have been better if it had been able to go through the entire process. I think the way that this has been executed indicates that was the final draft, because they didn't have anything else in their back pocket.
We know it was the final draft because the people who leaked it, and it wasn't John DeLynn who leaked it, by the way, it was people who gave it to John DeLynn.
Right,
They were getting it off of their software that they have, which was, I mean, they were pulling it from the current version. So
right.
it's like they got a manual update, and this was just sort of stuck in there, and then people were pulling it from that.
So then here's a question. What's worse, the cover-up or the act, so to speak? Because on the one hand, the act is pretty bad, and it's I want to think that that's what's causing me so much anxiety or just like annoyance and just I'm going to resign. But then on the other hand, the sheer incompetence that's shown through this process to me in some ways is almost worse, because it shows that there's no one. The Wizard of Oz analogy is apt. It's like there's no one behind the curtain except for an old man pulling levers, and doesn't know anything.
It just reveals that there is no inspiration. These are just old guys who are trying to do the best they can. And when you're an old guy with a bigoted position, the best you can is bigotry.
Yeah, but even bigotry can be like. I feel like Prop 8 was executed better, because this level of incompetence was never shown through. Like, I was a believer back then, and it bothered me, but like at a distance, because somehow I didn't see the inner workings of their minds behind the scenes. But in this case, it's like a play-by-play of incompetence. It's really, I don't know. It's just any hope that I had that there was prophetic guidance or a bat phone to God or whatever. It's just like,
doesn't it show a lack of acknowledgement or realization that they cannot, that the internet and information can't be controlled anymore? That doesn't feel that more than anything else?
It sounds so internet illiterate the way that it's come out. And, you know, when we were doing the parodies of things, my I was so angry. I was so angry, and I listened to my parodies. I'm like, this is just anger. I don't even know if it's funny. It's just angry. But, and, you know, it portrays them as like 15 evil cackling guys, like drumming their fingers and cackling maniacally. Now we're going to show it.
Right.
But I don't think it actually is. I agree with Bob. I don't think it's intentional evil douchebaggery. I think they feel invested by God with this divine calling. They're trying to do the right thing. And like, consider their epistemology. How do they know something is true? Authority and intuition. They get a feeling about it. So they've been in the church for 8 decades of Packer-esque anti-gay rhetoric. They're going to take this icked out feeling that they have about anal sex and whatever lesbians do in bed, this like weirded outness, and they're going to interpret that as revelation of the Lord's will for his policies and say, oh yeah, it kind of sounds like what we do with polygamy. Let's just do it the same way that we do with polygamy. And that's all the thought that goes into it.
And I think just to add to that,
they also have this dissonance that they're carrying around with them, that in those 8 decades, when they looked up to the people above them, they thought, once I get to that level, then I'll have the one-on-one face-to-face conversations with Jesus. And they get there, it's not happening. And so what do they think? They think, oh, okay, I'm still being tested, and I definitely, when I do see Jesus, I want him to say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. So I am going to be as strident as possible in these things that have been laid down before me. And I've been called to be a witness, even though I don't really have anything to witness of except the things and the people and that's come ahead of me. But I am going to be as strident a witness as possible so that when that time comes that, you know, so I do agree. Yeah. I don't think that they're, you know, like running their fingers and stuff, but they are also so separated from, I think, the common experience of church membership because they've been part of this hierarchy.
I agree with that because I was talking to a friend about this, like just wondering how is it possible that they didn't think this through? Because it's obvious based on the amount of time, the way what Scott described as the, you know, the 2-stage rollout, and the, you know, they kind of fucked up between the first one and the second one. And anyway, it's obvious they didn't think. It's obvious that no one really seriously considered the possibility, A, that this would get out, and B, that it would be controversial. And I think we're underestimating how incredibly isolated they are from the everyday experience, like Glenn was saying. Like, if you – these are people that fly around in a private jet, and then they arrive at places, and people accept them, and they just say, oh, my God. I mean, they
some people stand up and sing songs when they enter the room.
Exactly.
In hushed tones.
Well, but I think
but
also
what do
their
think
internal
–
What?
So what do they think now? I mean, after this firestorm, are they forced to recognize that about a quarter of their membership supports gay marriage?
I think they have so perfected the act of just faithfully accepting things that you don't really know. So the things that you don't really know are on the same par, if not more so elevated than things that you do know, that they can't. They just can't get into the mindset of a member of the church that actually does have doubts and actually does question things because they have eradicated that from themselves just by virtue of going up the chains of authority and this glaring reality that Jesus isn't there talking to them, you know. So it's all faith, this huge leap of faith, and they're all in. They're totally invested. And I don't think they understand how other people can't be, and I think they get a little ticked off when they see indications that people aren't as invested as they are in faith, and so for me, when I talk about being out of touch, I'm thinking more along those lines of just that internal working process of how you don't doubt. There's no doubt. Don't doubt.
Nobody's expressing doubt to them directly.
You can't prepare and anticipate people's doubts and questions if you don't have any concept of doubting and questioning.
Yeah.
And that's what I think this exposes.
The anecdote that this reminds me of is what Marlon Jensen said about when he gave that quote about people leaving the church, that there's been more people leaving the church since the time of Kirtland. And he knew that he would be in trouble with Elder Packer when that story ran in the Deseret News. But he knew as long as it didn't run in the Deseret News, Packer wouldn't know about it. And he went into Packer's office, and he had the copy of the Deseret News there. And it was around the same time that Packer gave that phrase in General Conference about why would a loving God do that to anyone, talking about gays. And so Elder Marlon Jensen's quipped back, or Packer said to him, I've been reading about you in the newspaper. And Marlon Jensen said, I've been reading about you too, President. He'd seen him. But it just how out of touch a person like that in that high of a leadership position to not have, you know, a couple advisors around him that are going to feel comfortable to tell him when he's completely out of line. I mean, it's scary. It's scary that this could go out without some kind of a focus group or some kind of, you know, somebody on their staff saying this is a really bad idea.
Well, that's where I wonder where Kurt McConkie was with all this. They're certainly involved with policies, and somebody must have said this is a bad idea.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting conversation.
Isn't it just poor? I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but from the lawyers in the group, isn't this just poorly written? Poorly defined?
It's written like a contract is what it's written like. It's written like a 400-word sentence that you'd have to have a law degree to be able to untangle it in, you know. It's written like a lawyer would write it. An out-of-touch lawyer.
But it's not written in – I mean, in the – you know, from – in terms of, like, it's being similar to legal form in general, sure. But, like, in terms of accomplishing the objectives that it is purported to accomplish, doesn't it not close the doors, or it doesn't really shore up those legal vulnerabilities in the way that they're saying it's supposed to?
No, it accomplishes what they wanted originally, assuming that it would not be leaked because it was only being in a copyrighted handbook that only the super secret leaders would read. So I think it accomplished exactly what they intended, which was very to broadly have this impact on these kids. But what they didn't account for, or what they didn't expect, was that it would be leaked so immediately, and the impact or the response would be so overwhelming. That's what they didn't foresee. But I think it's written exactly how they meant it to.
Okay. All right.
All right. Any final words?
In retrospect, they would have written it differently if they knew it was going to be leaked and the response was going to be so great, which is what makes them a-holes.
So one thing I was expecting to see that I didn't see in this clarification at all was any kind of reference to blended families. Yeah. So they're completely missing the boat on that, and that's going to happen all over the place. You know, a lot of these a spouse who or a parent who gets divorced and then will end up getting remarried. So they're going to have, within the same family, they're going to have two different classes of kids now to deal with. Well, these kids can go on the temple trip, and these kids can't go on the temple trip. That's going to happen.
And right. So that. Yeah. And the cutoff is weird, too. It's like, oh, your brother was grandfathered in, but you didn't make it. Because when it was your time to come down from heaven, God wanted it this way. That makes perfect sense.
So here's my question. With the clarification, and even Otterson's clarification of the clarification.
Handbook to the handbook.
What has changed or been clarified other than the word primary?
So the way it was written before, it didn't. The policy applied to all children of a homosexual who's living in a marriage or cohabiting, regardless of the parenting time. Now they're saying it only applies to those kids who live primarily with that parent.
Well, also,
and there's the grandfather clause.
Right, and there's the grandfather clause.
And also before, it was much, much worse, because you could have been, like, you know, in a gay relationship for like 6 weeks in 1997, and then you're black marked forever and ever. And that's, I think that's gone away now. So
The has been in a relationship clause.
Right.
Yeah.
That was much broader. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was shows their incompetence. Like, whoever wrote that was like, yeah, this sounds good. Like,
enormous overreach.
Yeah. And it's also really weird because it makes it so that a sin is unrepentable. So that was kind of weird. It's like, you know, most times you do something and it just, you can plug the hole and nobody has to be the wiser and you move on. But in this case, it's like, no, it's pretty much one of the worst things possible, because we're never going to forget. But they changed
it. And so primary, but primary still hasn't been defined.
Right. So we assume 51%, but that's just an assumption.
Yeah. Great. So the policy hasn't been fixed, so it's still as shitty as ever.
Yeah. But they're done. Like, to Jake's point, you don't get that many chances, and they've had two. So, like, they can't.
Oh, yeah.
It's over. This is it.
It's done. You get one shot. They took their shot and they doubled down. They made extremely small concessions and they doubled down on the portions of it that were really, really terrible, which is we're excluding kids for a reason that we have not explained, as Glenn pointed out. And
And being not gay is now one of the core tenets of the church.
And they're just following the script that they've set out for themselves, that they will continue to follow into oblivion, which is separate the wheat from the tares, mm-hmm. until there are so many called and so few chosen that they know who the real elect are. And they're just going to keep feeling right about stuff. And that people like us are outraged by this is just another indication that this narrative is real. It's divinely imprinted. Everything's right about Mormonism, and they're just going to keep going on their merry ways.
As will their members, yeah.
Yeah. So on that message of hope, can anybody think of a good song for this episode?
I Want to Break Free.
That's a good one.
Okay. How about Weird Al's...
Weird Al.
One More Minute with You.
That's what I was thinking. I'd rather jump naked into a...
swimming pool filled with razor blades.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Rather clean all the bathrooms in
Grand Central Station with my tongue. Spend. Yeah. All right.
Oh,
we got a couple.
Cool. Well, I heard that you're leaving. Gonna leave me far behind.
So far behind.
Because you found a brand new lover. You decided that I'm not your kind. So I pulled your name out of my Rolodex. And I tore all your pictures in two. And I burned down the malt shop where we used to go. Just because it reminds me of you. That's right.
That's right.
You ain't gonna see me crying.
I'm glad
that you found somebody new. 'Cause I'd rather spend eternity eating shards of broken glass than spend one more minute with you. I guess I might seem kind of bitter. You got me feeling down in the dumps. 'Cause I'm stranded all alone in the gas station of love. And I have to use the self-service pumps. Oh, so honey, let me help you with that suitcase.
You ain't
gonna break my heart in two. 'Cause I'd rather get 100,000 paper cuts on my face than spend one more minute with you. I'd rather rip out my intestines with a fork than watch you going out with other men. I'd rather slam my fingers in a door again and again and again and again and again. Oh, can't you see what I'm trying to say, darling? I'd rather have my blood sucked out by leeches. Shove an ice pick under a toenail for two. I'd rather clean all the bathrooms in Grand Central Station with my tongue. Then spend one more minute with you. Yes, I'd rather jump naked on a huge pile of thumbtacks. Or stick my nostrils together with crazy glue. I'd rather dive into a swimming pool filled with double-edged razor blades. Then spend one more minute with you. Rip my heart right out of my rib cage with my bare hands and then throw it on the floor and stomp on it till I die. Then spend one more minute with you.
Hi, this is Chad from Orem, Utah, and I have met one of the three Nephites. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anybody for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.